supporting Mother Earth. Thank you for all your abundant gifts. Good morning, Father Sun. Thank you for feeding all living things on Earth. Thank you, Plant Kingdom. Thank you, trees and plants, for converting the sun's light into edible foods that we can consume and digest, and for providing oxygen in the air that we breathe. Good morning, water. Thank you for being 75% of our body. We are one, and we bless you and protect you because we cannot live without you. Good morning, Animal Kingdom. Thank you for your companionship, your beauty and splendor, and for your sacrifice of life so that we may eat and live. Thank you, Great Spirit that moves in all things. Thank you for our lives and for the opportunity to be here and to be of service in this sacred earth garden of life. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Hello and welcome to Shaman's Keep. This is Caroline Wise King, your host, and I'm so glad to be here today. It's such a beautiful day, and we have a wonderful guest. I have with me today Maladoma Patrice Sommey. He is a West African elder, author, and teacher, and is renowned for his gifts of healing and divination. He has had a fascinating life, fraught with detours and obstacles, and yet he has persisted and is fully walking his destined path to bring the healing wisdom of the African ancestors to Westerners who are hungry for guidance to lead them back to balance and harmony in their lives. So it is a great pleasure and honor to welcome you to Shaman's Keep. Welcome, Maladoma.
Oh, thank you for having me in your wonderful show.
Well, it's a real pleasure, and I know that you're traveling so much of the time, and I think I had to book you 2 months ahead of time to get you to share this time with me. Where are you today? Are you?
I'm at home today, thank God. Although I travel a lot, okay. I always love to be home, and whenever I get the opportunity, I do so.
What do you call home?
Florida.
Florida.
Home is Orlando, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I grew up near Gainesville, Florida. I was born and raised up in that area. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, you know how Florida is then. Okay, well, I know you do a lot of workshops and retreats and healing sessions all over the world. I looked at your schedule, and you're hopping back and forth from Europe to the U.S. and from the East to the West. And how do you keep a schedule like that? My goodness, it must be very tiring.
Oh, I don't know. I just I keep hearing the question, how do you do that? And I join all these people to ask myself the same question. How do I do that? Every end of the year, I realize, wow, I'm still around. And I've been running around like a chicken with a head cut off, and I'm still hanging in there. I believe it has to do with the support that I'm getting from the spirit of my ancestors, the spirit of my grandfather, and because I can feel that they have a big role to play in whatever I'm doing. And they are the one who are doing the real work behind the scene. See? So that's
true.
Who I'm grateful for. And that's why sometimes in facing another round of journeying at a time when I would rather be home, I realize I can't do this. And all of a sudden I found myself completing that, coming back home and feeling pretty normal.
Yeah,
and so,
well, they energize you, don't they?
That's right. All I could do is just be grateful, thankful that they are always there when I need them. And that they are indeed the greatest example of what happened when you trust your ancestors, you trust the spirit that work with you. Because for me, they've never turned their back at me, you know.
Yes, and it's a very different journey when you're traveling on the higher power gasoline there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it keeps you really energized and moving and not feeling the stress of it, that you're just going and doing. And
in fact, that's true.
Spirit guides you.
That's wonderful. It is wonderful, partly because, you take a deep breath and you get going, and all of a sudden you realize that other forces have taken over. I'm just along with the ride. And this is a very comforting thought, not necessarily while you're contemplating a trip, but the fact that you've completed one successfully, you see. So that's the beauty of it, absolutely.
Well, Maladoma, your story is so unique. I would like you to tell us a little bit about where you were born and what happened to you when you were only 4 years old.
Oh, boy. Yes, I was born in the country of Burkina Faso in the southwest area. And this tribal community that is that they called Dagara, and my little village is called Dano. This is where I was born in the mid 50s, before my country became independent. At that time, of course, it was the colonial dispensation at work, and my family being trapped between the tradition and the pressure of Catholic colonialism. I at the age of four, I found myself thinking that I was being given a ride on a 1947 BMW by a Catholic priest. They used to come to the house to talk with my father. But that was it. That was how I left my family. And
he just kept driving with you. He took you away.
Yeah, that's it took me to the so-called boarding house where other folks have been taken away and brought to. And that's how my journey began. It didn't take very long before I realized, gee, this ride is not—it's not a round trip.
Wow!
And it took me 16 years looking for the round trip.
Wow!
Which,
I can't. Yeah.
Yeah, and when I returned, that was 16 years later. Absolutely.
Wow. I can't even imagine how frightening it must have been when you realized that you weren't going back home, that you were being taken to a completely different, transplanted into a Christian boarding school environment. How did you cope with that?
I didn't cope with that. It was just, it's like my soul left, my spirits flew away, and I felt like a shell. It is what happened when you are beyond being shocked and realizing that the cozy of parental surrounding is no longer, and that not even knowing what's the road back as well as how do you get out to go home, it all translated into a life that looks like a bright light suddenly turned dim and black, and thinking no longer exists. It felt like pretty much being dead and waking up in hell. And so for the psyche of a child, it's extremely, this is the epitome of trauma. And, some people say I never recovered from it. I just know that these kind of intense moments need the experience of years and years in order to be processed in such a way that they serve eventually the kind of mode of life that I personally have ended up living. It took a constant studying and dwelling on the subject matter in order for me to see the connection between that and purpose and life work and so on and so forth. But as a child, it's insuperable. It is the equivalent of death, you know.
Oh, I understand. I mean, well, I can't say I really understand, but I can imagine how difficult it must have been to unlearn everything that you had been taught by your parents and in your village, and then have to learn a completely new language and a new way of living, and without the nurturing and love of your family. Oh,
well,
I just,
of course. In retrospect, you look at this and I find out that, you know, at the time I wasn't alone, but a child is not thinking that way. A child is always thinking, right, it's me and my parents. I don't care what the other children are feeling. You know, right now we're not family, we're not community. But the thing about it is that emotion oftentimes played the role of the aftermath, witnessing the trauma and then reacting against the trauma. And somehow ancestors have held me quite well, I might say, to the point where I did not fall, therefore, terminally victim of this traumatizing experience.
Well, there must have been other children like you that you grew up with that had been taken from their homes and brought there as well, right?
Yeah, of course, that's what I was making reference to earlier on.
Yes, so you bonded, you did bond with those boys, and was it just boys or boys?
Yeah, it was just boys, and so eventually bombed, and it was quite refreshing. Eventually, over the years, to get to know that, you know, there are other parts of the same country that other boys like me come from, and it resulted in an increasing sense of a new family. Family,
a
that
broader
of course,
family.
It's call it a brotherhood, without the parental supervision, but it did quite a bit in helping foster a certain sense of belonging to each other, in a way that is supportive, in a way that is creative, and because in the end of a situation this tense and this critical oftentimes serve as fuel to the imagination and creativity, which gets reinforced by the presence of other folks that you are bonding with. And
yes,
such was the case. It helped in a way to hold hand together in the face of, let's call it, common enemy or common foe. And it is in that context that we realize that the bit of genius that we had was thriving in a context like that to help us affirm survival in the face of something to the contrary. You know, so we held each other quite well in that context.
So you had 15 or 16 years of schooling, or what I think of as programming by the Jesuits, right? And what happened to motivate you to escape and go back to your home village?
In fact, there was never any motivation to get away from there. There was such a thing as a constant feeling of being in touch with a reality that appeared increasingly as parallel to the one that had been so successfully indoctrinated by. And I confessed in my story, the one recurring dream that I kept having when I was about to close my teen years was the presence, the apparition of the face of my grandfather saying, time to go home. Of course, at the time, I had no clue what home meant. I mean, after so many years,
where it was or how to get there.
That's right. Where how to get there? That was not an option. The issue was that the dream became quite involving, strong, as if it has shifted from dream to actually vivid moment of apparition. Which I, you know, I kept to myself, I kept personal. It just happened that the occasion presented itself in a way that was not too elegant. One morning, we were in one of these exercises in the classroom where the main subject was spelling, and something happened between me and the teacher, who was a priest, and that was one thing too many. I ended up into some really violent physical fight with that with our priest at a time when, you know, all the anger and frustration of 16 years came together into a supreme force that I applied against the person who is an archetype of my demise, and almost killed him. So, having done this in the face of you know, several dozen witnesses, the only thing I could see of was get the hell out of here, run, because there's a certain thing that we knew you don't do. It is the abusing the divine authority, getting into such a situation with someone who is supposed to be the representative of God. That's a highly, highly damaging.
A great offense, yes.
Yeah, it's an unforgivable offense, like the what we used to call in the Catholic creed. It's a mortal sin, the kind of sin you can never recover from, because God doesn't have a space for forgiving such a thing. At any rate, I found myself running wildly out of the perimeter of the establishment and into the wilderness, and I kept going in the same direction. It took me a week and a lot of trial and tribulation, but I indeed made it home, you know. 125 miles.
Oh, 125 miles. You walked.
It's in seven days. You know, you divide it by 7 days. You got a reasonable average. You know, 16 years for a child. A lot of physiological changes resulting in not being recognizable. That was to be expected. All I remember was that the first person that came in as I sat outside was my my father, who didn't recognize me. The others were not around for one reason or another, and they didn't pay very much attention. Actually, the detail fainter and fainter the more I talk about it. However, it was my mother that saved the day. She came in from the farm carrying this load of wood on her head, and when she arrived, you know, she first took a look, and then decided to keep going, but then retraced her step and looked again, and that's when she something confirmed with her, and it was a really emotional reaction on her part.
I'm sure.
One that I will always remember. It just got stamped into my psyche forever.
Oh, yes. What a homecoming to be welcomed in with so much love and joy and tears and all of it.
Absolutely. I'm sure. I didn't know what you were talking about because I had lost my native language. I couldn't speak it anymore.
And so you couldn't communicate. You had to learn it all over.
I had to learn it all over, but I knew that whatever she was saying were very sweet, in between her tears and yelling and screaming. That was really one powerful healing moment that I would never forget. And it was then that my, call it re-education, re-entry, catching up with that which had been severed from, begun. And to tell you the truth, that too was not fun. Becoming all of a sudden estranged to the point of questioning why I even run away home, because you know, the Jesuit institution has become quite familiar. At least I knew how to survive there. But to this new place that is supposed to be the commonplace, I had no way of knowing how do I survive here. Can't speak the language, don't know any of the manners, and the old compound, the one that I was born in, had become very strange, extremely unreliable. That is to say, I had nothing in myself that would re-accept that and get used to it. You know, you're talking to a 20-year-old who had been away for 16 of those 20 years and, you know, had gotten into a habit that are completely different from the one that he was being asked to become familiar with all of a sudden. So that's that was one hell of a new journey.
I'll bet it was. Well, who took on responsibility for teaching you again the mannerisms and the language and everything of your people?
Well, the language part, was nobody's responsibility. The way learning happened in Dagara culture is that you bathe in it and you listen and pay attention and try to do the best you can what you see around you. So that part, I was never given any particular classes or instruction.
Right, you just.
The rest of it, the culture, the tradition, and so forth, those were the work of my mentor. You know, the kind of person who will be referred to as a shaman, but he's like an uncle. However, is an uncle whose job it is to lead me into the issues that are very important to the tradition. Whether I had gone away or not, this is what he would have done. And so my return was an opportunity for him to get on with the job that maybe he had thought that he's been freed from by my being absent. So he's the one who took me on, but he didn't take me on as an individual. He also took me on as a kind of icon in the village, partly because my return raised a lot of issues, mostly in terms of whether knowledge acquired abroad or acquired from a different culture was capable of mixing with knowledge native of the village or the tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And if so, how do you establish the link between the two, particularly in a person who, at least biologically, come from the area, but from the perspective of everything else, is an alien, you know.
Well, yes, you were contaminated.
That's right.
Teachings.
Yeah, that's what for them, you know. Once you stay abroad beyond certain limit, there's a name that is associated with you, which suggests that somehow you have become more alien to the to your place of birth, to your culture, to require a kind of, let's call, recycling in order to bring you up to date. And so that's what I was up against. And first, the one most important issue was whether I should be initiated. I should partake in the initiation, given the fact that, you know, it's a very hard thing to do, difficult, dangerous, deadly. And even for those who never left, what would that mean for someone who has never been around to go through initiation? I mean, my mentor, I guess, was the one that managed to convince the Council of Initiation that this is part of a bigger plan, and that their role, it was to hold the space for me to go through that which will indeed bring me up to date with the core values of the tradition. And at a personal level, what I was hoping for was that through initiation, at least I was going to end the sense of alienation that I was constantly feeling with respect to my village, my family, my culture, and so forth. To get
yes,
that
you were
initiation.
A stranger.
That's right. And I could see initiation as a handing over a gift that would confirm the end of this alienation. And
yes.
So that's what I wanted more than anything else, beside the fact that I was thinking that upon being initiated, then all these feelings that I was experiencing were going to come to an end, and I was going to be happy ever after. Well, it didn't happen quite like that. But something else did happen. What did happen was that, you know, initiation showed me that the spirit exist, and that the ancestors are real, that the method of knowledge acquisition from the point of view of indigenous Africa is radically different from the manner in which knowledge is acquired in modern culture. Initiation was more like a school in the course of which 6 weeks, I learned far more than what I've ever learned in those 16 years at the school, learning French and then everything else using the language of French. And what I learned later on, 13 years later, at universities. The thing about it is that it became a rich field for me to engage my imagination, to realize that cognitive processes vary from culture to culture, and the culture that is essentially rooted on spirit, on the existence of otherworldly reality, oftentimes exercises cognitive process in a radically different way, one that takes into account that information that we encounter out there must first be in our bones. That must be sitting there, and that spirit comes in to rattle and stir that information away, much like a software data that you have to boot and log in a password, and something appears on the screen for you.
Mm-hmm.
It did give me a completely different picture of the human being as essentially a spiritual entity whose experience in this dimension and familiarization with it draws a lot from the geography associated with being a spirit, as if we have a base somewhere. A base where our spirit used to dwell and has taken on the physical body in order to come into this world. This is when I learned, essentially, that no one comes into this world for no reason, that we all come into this world for a purpose. And that purpose is well known at the place where we were before arriving here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I understood that Maladama He who makes friend with the enemy was my purpose. And that's when I understood that the name that is given at birth to people in my tribe is an encapsulation of the purpose that they signed up to fulfill in this world.
Oh, that's amazing. So you were given the name Maladoma at birth, and what it means is to be a friend to the enemy or the
Yeah,
or
to befriend strangers? The enemy, to make friend with the enemy and the stranger. Yeah, because in Dagra, it's enemy and strangers are the same thing.
Well, you've certainly walked that path. My goodness, you have fitted. Yes, you were put in situations where you had to become part of that other society. But coming home, you came back to being a whole person that wasn't just physical, but also a spiritual being.
And, you're absolutely right.
And that was the big difference between where you came from your village, and being in a Christian or a Jesuit type of schooling, is because in Western view, everything is what we can see with our eyes, hear with our ears, taste, touch, measure, put under a microscope, that's all that reality is.
Yeah.
And so you went back and reincorporated your spiritual being into this person that you are.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is something quite important, because one of the difficulties that I've noticed in this culture is that, we tend to compartmentalize. You know, first there is the logical, empiric reality that we have to abide by in order to be able to fulfill good citizenry, be in the social world, and then there's spirit. And so when we move, we have to move from the one to the other consciously. Well, I came to realize that these realities are not that separate. They intertwine. We are spirit. There is indeed a kind of consciousness that is directed outward to the physical world, but the physical world is a spirit world that has taken on this kind of outfit, just as we are a spiritual entity that have taken on physical form in the form of a flesh in order to be able to exist in this manner. So in that way, none of this is to be compartmentalized, separated the way we end up doing eventually.
Yes, so, I believe that we're half spirit and we're half. That's what I mean. That to have our whole self, we have to live with the two integrated, so that
that's
we're spirit
right.
beings living in a body. And but here, the spirit is eternal, and the body drops away. But we're here, but we have to function from the spirit.
That's right. You know, my grandfather used to make it clear that the body is like a piece of cloth that we wear, and sooner or later it's going to wear out. And like the clothes that we'd like to replace, when this particular one is worn out, we got to get out of it. We got to leave it, and that's what happened. That we call death. Mm-hmm. Leaving the physical behind and reintegrating the kind of form that we were before we took on this space suit is a matter of daily thing. It's a taken for granted. But the interesting thing in there is that for me, I discovered that a lot of the thing that I was being taught in the Jesuit institution, including the spiritual part that came with a mythology whereby there was a divine that was sitting way up there, most of the time quite temperamental and keeping an eye on all the bad things that we're doing and not giving us any reward, because apparently we had to prepare ourselves to go to heaven, increasingly making this earth look like, it's a penitentiary or something. And eventually, if you're well behaved, then eventually you're going to be released to go up there. I didn't find that. I found none of that in my tradition. I found that, in fact, you know, we all came into this world in order to complete God's work. That this whole planet is a work in progress. And that yes. a lot of us join the bandwagon because we love this planet. We love what God did. And we want to put in our two cents in order to increase the beauty of it, to increase the palatial nature of it. Not so much coming here to act like we've been sentenced and thrown into a penal colony, waiting for the time when our death constitutes a release back to home base or something. So it is then that I started to find it really sensical that there are all these other spirits along in the ladder going to the divine. The spirit of nature, the spirit of the water, the spirit of the earth, the spirit of yes. of the tree, and so forth.
Yes,
and,
it's life. Everything
yeah, reality,
is alive.
Yes. Yeah, reality became mm-hmm. a colorful living thing, yes. like a dance that made me feel so happy to be part of such a rhythm, such a fantastic journey where everything I look at mean that I've been looked at also. I'm being seen and I'm seeing. I mean, there is indeed a kind of vitality that cannot be ignored in a context like this, you know. And so all of a sudden, Indigenous became quite attractive because it contained all of these things, making life look like an ongoing celebration, one
yes.
that has more positive than negative, one that does not construct guilt and culpability as the basis for an ongoing mortification as a way of contributing to something redemptive somewhere down the road. The point being that the indigenous simplicity was a reflection of the simplicity of nature, the simplicity of water, the simplicity of the earth, the animal, all the living thing that we're living simply so that other people can simply live. And when the fusion of all of this was clear to me, I realized, whoa, this is what life is about. And
yes.
my ancestors knew that. My people know that. And that's why they have this initiatory process to allow people to merge with something like this for their own good and for the good of the connection, the beauty that we have between this world and the other, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I love the way you expressed it, that it's a dance between all of life here on Earth, the trees, mm-hmm. the animals, the sun shining on us, the water flowing. All of this
That's
is
right.
just this glorious dance of life that
Absolutely.
We are a part of, that everything is one with. So, that's
right.
awesome. Well, tell me, how after you get initiated and you're really feeling the spirit and everything, how did you then decide to go back to education in Paris, to the Sorbonne?
Well, the truth is I didn't decide. I mean, it was decided upon me, and somehow I found the logic of it, although reluctantly I did it. The point about it is, like I said earlier, initiation was an opportunity to discover that indeed I came into this world for a specific purpose, and my purpose was encapsulated in the name that I was carrying.
Amazing.
And so how would I be friend with a stranger if I stay in the village where I know everybody, where there is no stranger? And so so is the way in which my mentor was presented it to me, and saying that my purpose, the fulfillment of my purpose, is not within the village, it's without. It's outside of the village, and that's the reason why
the strangers.
I started. Yeah, that's why I started in this rough fashion, getting to know the stranger firsthand, and now I'm supposed to go out and continue figuring out this whole process for myself in order to fulfill my end of the bargain. And so, of course, it was kind of a reluctant thing, like I said, but eventually I realized that as long as we are walking along the line of our purpose, more often than not, things can bend quite dangerously, but they can never break. Indeed, a lot of skirmishes and a lot of challenges, trial and tribulation can happen, but eventually when the dust settles, you find yourself still standing. This is simply because you're not alone. Ancestors, the spirit of your allies, they all celebrate the fact that you walked along the path of your purpose. And so all kind of negativity can be thrown at you simply because, you know, there are people out there who want you to be a kind of entity that glows in the dark in order to fulfill their idea of the perfect, and you wind up just being a human being, and all of a sudden that pisses them off because they don't want any humanity from you. They want everything to be divine, et cetera, et cetera. The issue has a bottom line. We must walk our life not as some kind of glowing spirit in constant state of contemplation in order, therefore, for a crowd to form around us. We must take every day into account, wake up in a state of gratefulness for having been introduced to yet again another day, and look into what it is that we might contribute to make that day not a waste. And in the process, keep any sense of grandiosity out of the way. In fact, notice the frailty of humanity, and take that into account. Also notice the fact that as human, being in this dimension required that I express more gratitude than knowledge about everything, how to do this, how to do that, and so on and so forth. In the end, it is kind of deferring to the spirits of the ancestors that are monitoring, protecting, and directing every step that I take in this dimension that eventually makes it possible for the beauty that is already here to continue to be visible to my eyes, so that my soul is constantly participating on a daily basis on the concerts of existence in this planet.
Well, I agree. We do have to be here since we were born and we are in this body. We have to be here and fully awake and aware and living in this reality. And yes, not not escaping into a monastery or escaping into hours of hours of being divinely in meditation and all. We do have to take part and participate in this world, because that's what we came here to do, is to bring more light, to bring more love, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, tell me about working with the ancestors, because I know you your main teaching is working with the ancestors. How can you explain that to our listeners?
Well, basically, the work of the working with the ancestors is basically filling them in on everything that is going on in your life. Personally, all I do is in the morning, I just call on them, particularly the spirits of my father and grandfather who are now on the other side, and, tell them, this is a new day. I don't know what's in it, and even when I do, I don't know how it's going to happen, and so I want you by my side, escort me, or go ahead and remove obstacles that are standing in the way and be known to me, so that the path can be as painless as possible. The thing about it is that I pose in front of them as their child who has taken on the baton wherever they left it off and feel that I'm supposed to take it as far as I can before I pass it on. And therefore, in order for me to be able to be my best, I have to constantly check in with them. Checking with them sometime in terms of basically what I'm doing, how I'm feeling while contemplating something I'm supposed to do, or how I feel after completing something that I have done. And either way, as if I report to them every little thing that is happening, thinking that the more information they get, the more they know what to do in order to correct any course that they may deem necessary or contribute some kind of input, blessing, help, direction in order to make the going less strenuous. So working with ancestors is almost pretty much like working with parents who are attentive to the process of their children.
Mm-hmm.
Who then come to the parent and tell them, look, this is how I feel, this is what is going on, et cetera, et cetera. Being in this world is almost being like in a school of learning, where there are a lot of unpredictable, and the ancestors are responsible for the unpredictable. They're responsible for what I can't see.
Mm.
And God only knows there's a lot we can't see that eventually manifests. If we could see what is coming, we would be able to show more dexterity at avoiding, dealing, or at least processing certain things in our life. And this is part of the reason why we need the extra eye coming from the ancestors. And in order to give them this extra eye, we need to become transparent to them, to tell them like it is, how we feel, how we don't feel, how we sleep, how we don't sleep, et cetera, et cetera. It is an ongoing interaction that makes them listeners most of the time, and eventually action is a result of the clarity of the report delivered unto them.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Okay. Well, that's, you know, in the Western society, some of us have grandparents or parents that were not necessarily good guides or had problems mm-hmm. like alcohol and things like that. And so yeah. It's hard to imagine that I would be talking to them and asking for their guidance. Okay. So I do have spirit helpers mm-hmm. and power animals and a teacher in the upper world that guides me. But before I came into shamanism, I had developed a relationship with spirit that I called mm-hmm. Father. But it wasn't like the punishing God of the Old Testament. It was this loving, forgiving Father that I felt was always with me. So I did. I've always done what you talk about by sharing what was happening in my life and what, you know, how I felt about it, and what I should do about it, and everything. So,
No, you're right about that. There's a certain sense that it's logical when you are aware that some ancestors have left a less than remarkable track record mm-hmm. while they were in this world, and therefore it's kind of questionable, or at least you don't naturally feel like you need to talk to them. That's a reaction that is quite predictable. However, what I learned from my elders was that people get a lot wiser and a lot smarter after they're dead. That indeed, we don't carry the dysfunction of the now into there.
Oh, that's good to know.
That the dead are much more, much wiser, much more informed where they are. And some of them so much so that they are in a constant grief about what they did when they had the blessing of a physical body that they could have used to something better. And instead, they got misled to using that time in the most infamous way possible. And these are the ones that are constantly reaching out to the rest of us because they need our help in order to be able to make amends, to correct what they, to correct the mistake that they made and so forth. Without the assistance of the living, the dead, who now realize how bad they used their time when they had a body, cannot do anything. Yes.
I'm so sorry to interrupt, but we are out of time, so I want to thank you for being with us today. It was wonderful.
And, thank you.
And people can reach you at maladama.com, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
Thank you again for being with us, and thank all of you listeners. I hope you had a great time with us today. He's wonderful. And so until next week, may the sun kiss your face, may the waters bless your body, and may all nature sing in your presence.